week's Sedra, Parshas Pinchas, begins where last week's Sedra left off. Pinchas killed Zimri, the head of the tribe of Shimon, and Kasbi, the Rethinim, and there was a terrible plague that was killing Klal Yisrael. Pinchas, because of his zealousness, he stopped the plague. As a result, the Sedra starts out, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron, a Kohen, Yeshivat Hamasi, Me'al ben Yisrael, it was Pinchas that took away my wrath from Bnei Yisrael, B'kanoz Kinosi B'socham, V'lochilis of Bnei Yisrael B'kinosi. Because of his wrath, he stopped Klal Yisrael from being destroyed, and therefore Hashem gave him the Bris of Shalom. So Rashi is bothered here by the fact that Pinchas is, his pedigree is related all the way back to Aaron. Normally, we just say Ploni ben Almoni. Here it says Pinchas ben Elazar, and we add ben Aharon, goes back to his grandfather Aaron. So Rashi explains why. He says, the fi shayu ashvatim mevazim also. Since the shvatim were mocking Pinchas for his act, and they were saying, haritem ben putizeh shevatam avi imo agalim levodezara vaharag nasi shevet misrael. So he said, hey, did you see this son of Putiel? That Lashon Petem, which is to fatten up, that his mother's father, Yisro, used to fatten up calves for Avodah Zarah. And look who he comes from. Varag Nasi, Shevet Misrael, and he killed one of the princes, the head of this tribe of Shimon. So therefore, concludes Rashi Lafika, Ba'akasu v'yichaso achar Aharon. And therefore, the Pasuk relates him back to his grandfather, Aaron, who we know is, of course, a tzaddik. So the simple pshat here is that since the tribes were mocking him, making fun of him, and saying he came from bad pedigree, from Yisro, so the Pasuk, to counter that, praises him and relates that, no, in fact, he came from Aaron HaKohen. Okay, it's a simple pshat. However, I'd like to share with you another pshat. Based on a story. The story of Rav Zusha, one of the famous Rav Zusha stories. Once Rav Zusha had to marry off one of his kids, it was a daughter, and he made his way to his Rebbe because he had no money, he was a poor man. So he went to his Rebbe, the Magid Mimezrich, and asked him for help. So the Magid heard, and he said, no problem, you're deserving of tzedakah. And he takes out of his drawer 200 rubles, which was those days enough to marry off your child. Gives it to Rav Zusha and says, you know, use it well. Mazel tov. So Rav Zusha thanks Rebbe immensely and takes the money and heads back home to his family. On his way, he notices a big ruckus going on in the street, people gathering around and noise and screaming. He didn't know what was going on. So he approached somebody in the crowd and says, what's going on over here? So he pointed to a woman, and she was on the street, and she was screaming, and she was like pulling her hair out. Zusha says, what's going on over here? So the man said, well, this poor woman, she's an almana, and her she was marrying off her daughter, and what happened was she somehow was able to raise some money and for the wedding, etc. Borrowed here, donations, etc. And she got the money together to marry off her daughter, and to bring the nedunya, the dowry. And what happened was she was walking around the street, and then she realized that the money was gone. It was lost, stolen, something happened to the money. And that's it. She has no other monies. And now the chassan will not agree to marry her daughter because she has nothing. And you can imagine, as a result, she's going crazy. So Rav Zusha said, oh, that's terrible. How much money did she lose? So they said, she's screaming that she lost 200 rubles. So Rav Zusha says, oh, yeah? Well, go over to the woman and tell her that I think I might have found the money. I might have found the 200 rubles. And she'll just have to give me simanim, you know, exactly how what the denominations of the money were. How many hundreds, fifties, whatever. But I found 200 rubles, and perhaps this is it. Sounds maybe like it is. So they, oh, really? They ran over to the woman, and they said, wait, don't cry. We found some, they might have found your money. Found 200 rubles. If you can just tell us the denominations, he'll check. And so the woman said, sure, I remember. There's this many fives and tens that she told. So he told Rav Zusa, he said, well, I'll have to check. I don't have it here. I'll go check, and I'll see the money I found if it's in this denominations. So he took the money that his Rebbe gave him, the 200 rubles. He went to the bank, and he changed it to exactly those denominations that the woman had said. And he brought it back to the person. Yup, this is it. This is their money. I found it. It's exactly the denominations that you said. And here it is. And he counted out the money, you know, 150, 160, 170, 180, 190, and he gave it to them. So people there were looking, says, what do you mean 190? You said you found 200. He says, I did. Yeah, so where's the other 10? He goes, it's right here. New, so give it to the lady. He says, oh, I'm not giving it to the lady. He says, what do you mean? You said you found the 200s, the 200s. Why don't you give it to the lady? He says, well, what? It's not coming to me 10 rubles for, you know, returning the lost object. He says, what do you mean, for 200 rubles? You don't deserve 10 rubles. It's a mitzvah. You know what? People get paid for them. It's a mitzvah to return a lost object. You give her the whole 200. He says, no, what? It wasn't for me. She'd have nothing. Come on, I deserve at least 10. He says, no, you don't. It's a mitzvah. Anyways, everybody started joining in on the side of the almana. Everybody was for her. It's not fair. What kind of a deal is this? You know, don't take money for returning a lost object. That's just what's going on. So finally, the people said, "Lo, we should take this to the Rav of the town." You know, Din Torah. Basically, he was right. So Rav Zusha said, "Fine, Din Torah it is. Let's go." So they go to the Rav of the town and ask the woman what's her side. She goes, "Well, I lost the money, and I gave some money, and this man found it, and he returned only 190, and he said he's taking 10, you know, for charge for returning the lost object, the chutzpah." So the Rav said to Rav Zusha, "Knew, what do you have to say?" What she said was 100% right. What, and that's not coming to me 10 rubles for returning the object? Come on. So the Rav said, no, not at all. It's a mitzvah. You don't take money for doing a mitzvah. You have to give her back the 10. So he says, okay. No, the Rav said, takes the last 10 rubles, gives it to the woman. She's happy. And everybody shuns this Rav Zusha and says, how is it terrible, what a person he is. He wants to take from his poor mana, he doesn't know it's a mitzvah. And they're shooing him away and chasing him out of town. So that was the end of that. Zusha went home, penniless now, not without any money to marry off his own daughter. And the Rav of the town happened to meet up with the Magid Mimezrich one day. And they were talking about this and about that. And the Magid was praising his chassid, Rav Zusha. And he described him in his righteousness. So the Rav said, oh, I think I know who you're talking about. This is Rav Zusha. You know, I hate to say this, but he's not as righteous as you think. He says, what do you mean? He says, yeah, I had a maisa with him not so long ago. This woman lost money, 200 rubles, and he found it, and he returned it. He wanted to keep 10 rubles for himself. Did you ever hear such a thing? And that. So as soon as the Magid Mimezrich heard this, he says, he right away put two and two together. He realized that wasn't his 200 rubles. So anyways, he called in Rav Zusha. Rav Zusha came to the Rebbe, and he says, Rav Zusha, okay, between you and me, the money that you found, that wasn't money that you found. Now, the money you gave that woman was the 200 rubles that I gave you for your daughter. Correct? Correct. Fine. Had a feeling. So that's okay. I understand, you know, in your righteousness, you wanted to help this poor almana. But something I don't understand bothers me. Why did you keep the 10 rubles? Mainly doing the mitzvah, you're turning and giving your own money. Why you couldn't give the whole 200? Why'd you keep 10 rubles to yourself? So Rav Zusha says, I'll tell you why. He says, you know, when I heard this story about this woman lost the money and 200, and I had exactly this money and for my own daughter, and I decided to give it to this woman. So, you know what? He says, as soon as I made this decision to give the 200, my 200 to this woman, you know, without telling anybody, of course, all of a sudden, I had this tremendous yetzer hara of haughtiness take over me. And my yetzer hara was saying, Rav Zusha, is there any greater tzaddik in the world than you? Can you imagine this mitzvah that you're doing? Not only are you helping out this poor almana, but you're taking money, your own money for your own daughter, which now you're going to have nothing, and you're helping this poor almana. This is an instant, instant road to Gan Eden. This is unbelievable. I started getting these feelings, and I had to destroy these feelings of gaiva, of haughtiness. So I decided to do what I did, not to return all the money, keep 10% for myself, knowing that everybody's going to degrade me and scream at me and curse me because of what I'm doing. So this way I could destroy this feeling of gaiva that I had. So at least I go away with a bad feeling, not a feeling like I'm the greatest guy in the world. So that's why I did it. So with this, along these lines, the Eish Das says we can explain the Rashi. Pinchas also did an unbelievable thing over here. It says in the Pasuk, I was going to wipe out all of Klal Yisrael for the terrible sins they were doing. But what? It was because of Pinchas that he stood in and he killed Zimri. Because of that, he saved Klal Yisrael. Can you imagine a mitzvah of saving Klal Yisrael? With every great mitzvah, like we saw in the story of Rav Zusha, is always the danger of gaiva coming into the picture. So, therefore, to counter the gaiva, we had the shvatim. Since the shvatim came and they are degrading Rav Zusha and Rav Azayim, as it says in Rashi, and mocking him, that's like Rav Zusha's, received the mockery. Since Pinchas received this mockery, that took away his the Yetzer Hara of Gaiva, and as a result, he was left with being related back to Aaron HaKohen. Then in the end, his action was complete. Without this mockery, perhaps Gaiva would have stepped in, and his action wouldn't have been a complete mitzvah. But because he was mocked, so that took away the Gaiva of his the Yetzer Hara of Gaiva, and he was left with being the grandson of Aaron. An act that was complete. I saw an interesting story, which the attachment to this story ties in very much to this idea. In the Sefer Tuvcha Yabiu of Zilberstein, he brought a maisa that he heard from Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shlita. And the story goes as follows. He relates it without any names. He says there was a person who needed to borrow some money. So he went to the local gemach in Bnei Brak, and the person around the gemach said, fine, I'm willing to lend you the money, but I need to have somebody that is, I don't know you, somebody that is can be a character reference, can tell who you are, if I can trust you. Can you give me a name? So he said, sure, I have a Rav who's a good friend of mine, and the Rav, I'm sure, will be a good reference. Okay, so he spoke to the Rav, and he says, mentioned a name, and he says, yeah, no problem, this guy is 100% straight, and you can lend him money without any problem, I'm sure everything's fine. So he says, okay, very good, Rav, thank you for telling me, and he lent him the money. So he gave him the loan, and that was that. The loan was for X amount of time, X amount of days, and when it came time for the loan to be repaid, the owner of the gemach didn't receive the money. The date came, and no money. Okay, it can happen. A person could be a day late. So he sent a letter out to the person. It's reminding him to return a loan, the time date has passed. And still nothing. Sent another letter. No answer, nothing. Didn't hear anything of the borrower. Nothing. So, okay. The owner of the gemach was a little bit upset. This money's meant for other people as well, but no sign of the money. One day, the person that ran the gemach, he bumped into the Rav that had given the character reference to this borrower. And he says, oh, Rabbi, you know, I feel a little bit uncomfortable telling you this, but Lamaisa, you know, you gave the okay to this person to borrow the money, if you remember, I called you. And the time came up for the loan a while ago, and I've been sending letters, and nothing, no money, no, I didn't hear anything. And I'd like to tell you that, because you're the one that gave the okay. So the Rav said, oh my God, I don't believe it. I feel terrible. So he says, what's wrong? He goes, oh no. The person who borrowed the money, on the day that the loan was due, he was busy, so he gave me the money. He gave me the money to pay you back. And I don't know, I got involved with this or that, and I totally forgot to give you over the money. It's my fault. He paid back the money on time. I just didn't, I was supposed to give it over to you, and I didn't. Here, you wait here, let me go home and get the money. Oh, I feel terrible. Anyway, so the Rav went, got the money, brought it to the Gemach, and he apologized again profusely that, you know, he received the money. So, okay, it happens. How was that? A week or two later, who shows up at the Gemach? The person originally who borrowed the money. He comes to the person, the runner of the Gemach, says, listen, I really want to apologize. I know I was supposed to pay you back the money a while ago. Here it is. What happened was I was hospitalized. I got very ill, and I was in the hospital. And I can show you the papers that I've been in the hospital for a while already. And since because of that, I wasn't able to return the money. When I got home, I saw you sent me all these letters. I didn't get them all. I was in the hospital, and I was anyways in no one's state to do anything about the money, whatever. And I really feel terrible. I'm sorry, but here's the money. So all of a sudden, the mouth drops of this the guy around the Rav. He immediately goes over to the Rav and goes to the Rav and he says, Rav, I feel terrible. He says, I pressed you for the money and I made you uncomfortable for no reason. It wasn't you. I see you paid the money from your own pocket, obviously, because without and I feel terrible. Anyways, that's the story. That's how the story ended in the book. And the Rav Chaim commented, and he says, an act like this, he says, has the power to protect the whole generation. Such an act of tzedakah, paying back the money without telling anybody, you know, and to help to save face for this boar or whatever. This act, he says, has the power to protect our generation. Adkan, that's the end of the story in the book. Just a few days ago, I happened to be leafing through there's a magazine, Mishpacha magazine, that has a children's section. And I just happened to be, you know, flipping through the pages, and I noticed a picture of Chaim Kanievsky, which caught my eye. So I just kind of looked at the headline, and the headline of the article was, an act that can protect the generation. And I quickly looked through the story, and I noticed that this Mishpacha magazine for the children, they had brought down in an earlier edition, they brought down this story that I had seen as well, Tuv Chayaviv. And what's interesting is the follow-up, because a letter was written in to the magazine by this woman, and she begins by saying that she is the daughter of this Rav. She's the daughter of the Rav in the story, who had paid back the money, etc. And she said, I would like to fill in the continuation of the story and some names, etc. So first of all, she said, the Rav, which was my father, Alav HaShalom, his name was Rav Politansky. So that was my father, who he really was a big tzaddik. And the one who ran the Gemach is Rav Mordechai Shlomo Berman, also Zatzal, no longer alive. And those are the names of the people. He's Rav Mordechai Shlomo was the brother-in-law of Chaim Kanievsky when he was alive. And so she says in the letter, I'd like to tell you the continuation of the story. So the story just ended where Rav Berman, you know, went to my father and apologized for, you know, pressing him, and because in the end my father had to pay the money, etc. But that's not really the end of the story, because what happened after that? The person who, of course, borrowed the money, you know, then since the money was paid already by my father, Rav Politansky, so he went to my father to return the money. You know, I said, you know, to thank him for paying the money for him, which he's, you know, he feels terrible, he shouldn't have done it, whatever, and he came to return the money to him, the obvious thing. So, interestingly enough, what happened, he came to return the money, and my father said, no, what are you doing? So he says, well, you know, you paid the money for me. So, he says, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't pay any money for you. It's not true. You must have gotten things mixed up, right? I don't know. And he says you must have paid the loan and you forgot about it. I don't know. You probably paid back the owner of the gemach and you forgot about it. I don't know. You have nothing to pay me back. So she says, can you imagine this additional righteousness on my father, right? Not only did he pay back, but he refused to take the money for it. And not only that, he refused to take the money for it, he claimed as if it's not true that he didn't pay it, and you probably paid and you forgot. So he says, she says, you know why my father did that? He said, for two reasons. He says, one reason is, he didn't want to make the borrower feel bad. You know, can you imagine a borrower feel this rob paid for him the loan, he paid back the loan? He didn't want to make it, therefore he made it as if, no, you probably paid it back, I didn't do anything, whatever, to make him not to feel uncomfortable. And he said, and she said, you know what the main reason is why he didn't want to take the money? This ties into our whole idea over here. Because he knew that if this person would know that he paid the money, and he'd therefore take the money from him, that people would start finding out about it. People would start talking, whoa, did you hear what happened with, Rav Politansky? He paid money for this guy. It would become well known. And my father wasn't interested in that his righteousness should be known to anybody. He was very, very humble. And again, the tie-in what we said is he wanted his act to be mushlam. He knows that once people know, but then, oh, it becomes famous, and people talk about his right, then Gaiva comes in. Gaiva goes into the picture, the Yetzer Hara, like we saw Rav Zusha, and Rav Politansky did not want any of this. And as a result, he mavatled the whole thing. He said, no, then I didn't do it. He didn't want anybody to say anything. And that was the end of that. And she said, she related that the Rav Chaim Kanievsky, he's the brother-in-law of the Randa Gemach. So he did hear about the story. He told his Rebbetzin, Rabbi Kanievsky, about it. And she approached, she was very friendly with the Rav Politansky's Rebbetzin. And, you know, they're speaking, so she mentioned it. So she came home to her husband and said, oh, I heard what you did, what that. And even to his wife, she says, no, I don't know. He says, it was a mistake. It's not, maybe it's a different name. You obviously got mixed up. It wasn't me. I don't have money to pay people's loans back. I was maybe a different name or something. You got it mixed up. And he refused to admit to his own wife that he had done what he had done. And she says, us as kids, we had heard about it, and we went through our whole life thinking that he never did this. He told him about it. He was, it was not me, it was a mistake, and the whole time he played as if nothing ever had happened. Only at his death, when we told Rav Chaim about our father was this nifter, then our Rav Chaim, he testified to the story. He knew it because it was his brother-in-law was involved, and testified, in fact, our father did lay out the money, and it was just keeping a low profile the whole time. So this, as we said, very similar to the Rav Zusha, and then we see from here, a lesson that we can glean from this, is, as we say in Marav every night, V'hasir satam milfaneinu me'achareinu, that we see that the Yetzer Hara doesn't give up, right? It wants to stop us from doing great acts, and that's the satan milfaneinu that's in front of us. But even if we do it, even when we do something great, the Yetzer Hara doesn't just give up and says, oh, you got me, okay, you did it, and that's it, you're great. No, it goes on and says, from behind, and pushes and says, you're great, you're unbelievable, wow, what an act you just did, and pushes us, so if it couldn't get us not to do the act, at least it will get us and trap us in the trap of Gaiva, then we should feel so great that we did this great thing and be real Gaivatic about it. So the lesson is that we have a tremendous battle in front of us. We can't win. The Yetzer Hara is in front of us, doesn't want to let us do the act. We do the act, oh, you did the act, very good, so now you're great, then comes Gaiva, and the Satan is in front of us, behind us, if we dive into Hashem every day, Hashem, take away the Satan, both from in front of us and from behind us, because he's everywhere. So we have to keep this in mind and realize that we have this battle. Hashem, we should our tefillahs should be answered, and Hashem should give us the strength to battle this Yetzer Hara front and behind. And if we do so, we'll be zocha a tremendous amount of schuyos and be rewarded here and later, and bring us the reward beginning in this world with the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu b'mehirah b'yameinu.